every family across this great entire searching land will live stronger in liberty, will live more splendid in expectation, and will be prouder to be American because of the act that you have passed that I will sign today.
And thank you for that, President Johnson. It worked nicely.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
For about 60 years.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Until now.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast, a smart show for stupid times. chuckle you hear there is Desi Doyen. Hi,
yes,
Des.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey.
All right. I hope to speak about Texas in a bit for an entirely different reason today. Actually, Desi's home state of Texas.
Yes, it is.
Are you proud of him?
No.
Okay. Well, you might be.
Not today.
Well, you might be for this reason. I will note this tweet last night from Doug Lewin, a Texas energy expert.
Yes.
He writes, quote, heat index in Houston is 111 degrees. He notes air conditioning demand is high. Gas and coal plant outages are up sharply. But prices for energy in Texas are the lowest in the country right now, he notes. Why? Well, Texas's nation-leading solar resources are generating more than 30% of the power needed on peak. In other words, it's really hot there. They need a lot of energy. Their gas and coal plants are failing, and yet they're doing just fine. Energy is staying low in cost thanks to, yes, clean, renewable energy.
Yes, it is preventing blackouts because, as Doug Lewin notes, natural gas plants and coal plants are tripping offline because it is too hot, but solar and wind are there and taking up the gap and preventing those blackouts.
Also, Lewin noted grid-scale batteries, which store energy from solar panels at night and from wind turbines when the wind is not blowing, reached their second highest output ever in Texas as the sun set last night, helping to keep energy prices lower, with prices even in this heat remaining 98% below the cap that could be charged if there was any kind of shortage. But there isn't, thanks to renewable energy.
You're welcome.
Coming up later this hour, Desi Doyen, in her latest Green News Report, will outline how the Trump administration this week has absolutely gone to war with those cheap, clean, renewable energy sources, and yes, including battery storage, gutting existing programs, such as rescinding or attempting to rescind some $7 billion in already appropriated funding, already agreed to by Congress through its bipartisan appropriation process, to subsidize the cost of residential rooftop solar for low and middle income Americans. We need energy, and Donald Trump is, well, killing energy. This was, by the way, a program that has been successfully helping homeowners to add clean, cheap, renewable energy sources to their homes, and subsequently to the American grid, which is desperately in need right now of new, hopefully clean, hopefully inexpensive power sources to help power new computer data centers that are sprouting up all over the nation to rapidly to serve the rapidly expanding AI development, for good or ill. But that's what's happening. And the U.S. needs power right now to support it. Of course, the Trump administration knows the nation needs the power, but it does not care if it's clean or cheap or renewable. Actually, it wants to make sure that it isn't clean or cheap or renewable so that its partners in the fossil fuel industry can continue to be the most profitable industry in the history of civilization, even as renewable energy sources are now outpacing fossil fuels everywhere else in the world except for here.
And they're cheaper, too. But, you know, the fossil fuel industry wants that money in your bank account.
Donald Trump, in fact, wants to make sure that America loses that race. And he's doing well. He's doing everything that he can, including clawing back previously approved funding and clean energy sources in order to do so. Back to the Texas energy expert Doug Lewin today on Twitter, who notes China installed 400 gigawatts of new power last year. Over 350 of those gigawatts were solar and wind. Here in the U.S., in the meantime, just 63 gigawatts. He notes, we talk a big game about leading on AI, chips, reshoring manufacturing, but where is the electricity going to come from? He notes, some say natural gas can replace renewables, but he notes, the largest natural gas turbine manufacturer, GE Vernova, is already sold out until after Trump's term. Meanwhile, China last year built 400 gigawatts. The U.S. built 600 gigawatts. And GE Vernova's global gas turbine output is just 20 gigawatts for the entire globe. And yet, that seems to be what the Trump administration is counting on. Lewin goes on to say, if we gut clean energy incentives now, we don't just fall behind, we're cooked. He adds, pun intended, I suspect.
And we are definitely cooked if we do not keep up with that electricity demand. Just want to underscore, there's a 4 to 6 year backlog on building natural gas plants because of that backlog in building turbines. Mm-hmm. And China is showing that, yes, you can build renewable energy right now, and it's way cheaper than trying to build a new natural gas plant. It's fast and cheap.
Lewin says you can't grow your economy and run AI data centers on back orders and broken promises. We're demanding more energy than ever, he says, and we're about to constrain the resources that are actually delivering it. We will, of course, pay for this madness, this idiocy, for years, for decades to come. And it is all happening right now with very little notice in the mainstream corporate media. So I'm glad you can join us. I hope you notice and remember, yeah, we warned you. Desi will focus no small part of our 6-minute Green News Report on that matter in a little bit, on Trump's war on clean, renewable energy coming up in a bit. But for the moment, some related good news. And then some related stupid news. Actually, it's all stupid, but at least some of the stupidity is somewhat mitigated here in this first story for the moment. It also follows up on a story that we have been reporting on for the past several months since Trump took office. The National Weather Service has received permission to hire, or in this case, I guess, hire back some 450 meteorologists, hydrologists, and radar technicians just months after being hit hard by pretty much random cuts and early retirement incentives enacted by Elon Musk and Donald Trump's so-called Department of Government Efficiency. As the excellent Andrew Friedman, no relation and spelled differently, reports now over at CNN, the new hiring numbers includes 126 new positions that were previously approved and will apply to, quote, frontline mission critical personnel, a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration official told CNN. The National Weather Service cuts, as we have been reporting, have spurred concerns over how well prepared the country is to withstand hurricane season, which is now just starting to heat up in the very warm Atlantic Ocean, which is being described right now as a powder keg by meteorologists as the traditionally worst part of hurricane season from August through mid-September arrives. Previous Trump administration staff reductions at the Weather Service were also scrutinized and criticized in the wake of the deadly Texas floods in July, with vacancies at the Weather Service forecast offices down in Hill Country in Texas, specifically vacancies in the offices of those Weather Service officials who are directed to contact local officials on the ground directly, whose responsibility is to warn local communities about incoming emergencies like the flash flooding that killed more than 135 people on July 4 on the banks of the Guadalupe River in Texas Hill Country, including dozens of sleeping young girls attending summer camp. Yes, the worst of that tragedy in Texas might have been avoided, but for vacancies at Trump's National Weather Service. As CNN reports, the cuts to the Weather Service staffing and early retirement incentives meant that the nation's frontline weather forecasting agency's staffing levels have fallen by more than 550 people since the second Trump administration began, when there were, by the way, already unfilled vacancies in the service, all of which were exacerbated then by the untargeted random DOGE firings, the financial incentives for federal officials to quit their jobs early, and a blanket hiring freeze across the federal government that was implemented by Trump that just, you know, crippled the service. Agency employees are now greeting the new news, unveiled at an all-hands meeting on Monday this week, with guarded optimism and relief, Friedman reports for CNN. Current employees have been working additional hours with additional responsibilities since the layoffs and the retirements earlier this year, trying to maintain the 24/7 posture that U.S. extreme weather requires, but they can't do that forever. And in cases like the Texas flooding, while the Weather Service had enough manpower in place to issue the warnings about the incoming flash flooding, the officials who would otherwise be in direct communication with local leaders to warn them specifically about the flooding, well, those officials simply were not there. Those offices were vacant. The agency has also been functioning, rather heroically, I would say, with less data from fewer, less frequent weather balloon launches, which are absolutely critical to the Weather Service reports. The announcement about the new hirings was also met with some frustration over the people at the agency who were lost in the failed attempt at government savings earlier this year. One NOAA official asked, quote, "How much time and money is it going to cost to train a whole bunch of new people when we already had trained people in place?"
Exactly. And a lot of institutional memory that was lost when those people left.
It is possible, notes Friedman, that some of the new hires will have been previously trained employees who were let go in the DOGE cuts, but we will see. The Weather Service, aided by lawmakers on Capitol Hill, had been arguing for months for a public safety exemption from the across-the-board federal hiring freeze. That exemption has now been granted, now that more than 100 were killed in Texas, I guess, and the agency now has been given direct hiring authority again, according to a NOAA official. Direct hiring authority, according to the Federal Office of Personnel Management website, can be given to federal agencies, quote, for filling vacancies when a critical hiring need or severe shortage of candidates exist. Well, I wonder how that critical hiring need happened. So that is expected to speed up the hiring process there, given the damage that the administration has already done to NOAA and the National Weather Service in the first 6 months of Trump's second term. I would love to say that the second 6 months of his term will be spent fixing the mess that he created during the first 6 months. But that doesn't seem to be the case, at least beyond the mess at the Weather Service for now. The administration seems dead set on continuing to make things worse in its second 6 months and well beyond, as detailed in our next story on all of this, also via CNN today, following up yet another story that we've been covering on the Green News Report in recent months regarding the congressionally mandated so-called National Climate Assessment. The National Climate Assessment, those assessments are created and published as ordered by Congress every 4 years. The landmark Research reports are authored by hundreds of scientists and experts intended to inform the country about the latest climate science and the current and future impacts of climate change in the U.S. Those reports take years to research and draft and publish. They go through multiple rounds of peer review with all 13 of the federal agencies that conduct climate research,
including the Defense Department.
So this is a big deal with a lot of work and a lot of folks putting time and effort into that report every 4 years, checking each other's work as they go on multiple levels. And finally, an independent National Academy of Sciences panel signs off on the content before publication. Now, the first Trump administration signed off on and released the fourth U.S. National Climate Assessment back in 2018. Again, they had to do so because it is mandated by law. At least they had to do so back in the first term when Trump was at least, you know, offering the pretense of following federal law. But it did its best back in 2018 at the time to sort of bury the news from that report by releasing it on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, when most Americans are doing anything but paying attention to news, much less the new National Climate Assessment. But in the meantime, as we've also reported, the current Trump administration has now deleted all of the previous reports from government websites. They've also fired the scientists who were working on the next iteration of that report, and they recently issued a separate report, a different report entirely, compiled by just five cherry-picked climate denialist researchers who have long challenged the science of climate change. Don't look at those reports compiled over years with hundreds of scientists through a rigorous and repeatedly peer-reviewed process. Look instead at this little report from these few cherry-picked fossil fuel industry favorite scientists who deny the worldwide climate science consensus. And oh, by the way, you can't look at those rigorous, congressionally mandated national climate assessments from the last 20 years because we've removed them altogether from the federal government websites.
You paid for those, by the way. Taxpayers paid for that, and they've now taken away taxpayer-funded science from the taxpayers.
So why does the government say that they have done this, that they have removed these reports entirely? Well, according to the fracking company CEO, who Donald Trump selected to be his energy secretary, a guy by the name of Chris Wright this week, the administration is updating the national climate assessments that have been previously published following years of work by hundreds of scientists and the rigorous review process before their original publication. Now, according to Wright, the administration is apparently in the process of rewriting the science, rewriting history in their attempt to pretend on behalf of the fossil fuel industry that whose products are the biggest driver of our climate chaos right now, that, the science that the government previously told you about, the science that we rigorously detailed and fact-checked and peer-reviewed, well, that was all wrong somehow, so we're just going to rewrite it in secret before letting you see it again. Chris Wright, who has been making the rounds over the past week to hype up his fake science report written by those five cherry-picked science deniers in order to offer a new phony pretext for canceling all of the climate change related regulations that have been instituted since the federal government itself issued its so-called endangerment finding regarding the dangers of releasing greenhouse gases into the atmosphere way back in 2009. Chris Wright had this exchange with CNN's Caitlin Collins about all of this on Tuesday.
The one thing you mentioned was the national climate assessments and that they're referenced here throughout this report. It does reference them, but the Trump administration has taken them down off of the federal websites. So basically, if you go in and click on the link, it goes to a dead link because there is no website there. Why remove those national climate assessments from the federal government websites?
Because we're reviewing them, and we will come out with updated reports on those and with comments on those. As
but
part
you
of this
cite them in this report,
dialogue.
So you can see why that's confusing.
Yeah, I don't know why they're taken down. They're easy to find anywhere. If anybody can't find the National Climate Assessment Report, they just got to Google a little better.
So you're reviewing them, and then we'll put them back up, or...
I'm sure they were taken down because as you read them, the conclusions, they weren't fair and broad-based assessments of climate change. When you get into departments and look at stuff that's there and you find stuff that's objectionable, you want to fix it.
So when you look at the stuff that's there and objectionable, at least objectionable to the fracking executive who has been made the energy department chief, well, you want to, quote, fix it. I bet he does. Past reports, quote, weren't fair in broad-based assessments of climate change. Weren't fair to who, Chris? Companies like yours who continue to make climate change worse and more deadly so you can make billions of dollars? Now, despite what you heard, Chris Wright, the Secretary of the Energy Department, stating pretty clearly there, thanks to the rigorous reporting by process, by CNN, when they reported on what Chris Wright said on CNN, they got it directly on CNN, and yet they went to the Energy Department to ask for comment, even though they had already had the comment from the chief of the department. An Energy Department spokesperson, Andrea Woods, said, quote, "The national climate reports are published by NOAA, not the Department of Energy." He was not suggesting he personally would be altering past reports. Okay, so I feel better now. if not Chris Wright himself, who will be altering the past reports in that case? Because
exactly.
Woods did not seem to say that wasn't going to be done, as dumb as it would be, given as Wright correctly notes there, the real reports are already available elsewhere out there, even if for some reason the federal government has attempted to erase history and reality by removing them from the federal government's website where they were originally published for some unknown reason. Well, now we know they want to, quote, fix them. In fact, as CNN reports, the interagency process and publication is overseen by the U.S. Global Change Research Program, which was established by Congress. Altering or revising previously published assessments would be a significant escalation in the administration's attempt to wipe credible climate science off of the record. Quote, "That would be a very unusual approach, especially given the process that went into creating these," said scientist Zeke Hausfather, who helped author the fifth National Climate Assessment, published back in November of 2023. "A very unusual approach," he said, in the classic understated, frankly, in some ways unhelpfully understated and polite way that so many scientists speak.
And, of course, in that cherry-picked climate science denier report that Chris Wright hastily put together, mm-hmm. Zeke Hausfather's research is misrepresented.
Of course.
Yes.
But you can't check it because they made it disappear.
Right.
So, no, these scientists like Hausfather are not, you know, these radical, raging liberals as the fossil fuel industry likes to paint them. They're actually very conservative in both their behavior and their assessments, as scientists tend to be, even when they are in a war with those who will spare no expense in trying to rewrite science and rewrite reality itself. Secretary Wright, over at the Energy Department, as CNN reports, played a large role in commissioning this new federal report. I should say so-called report, that questioned the severity of climate change, as CNN politely describes it, authored by five researchers who are well-known climate contrarians, according to CNN. The report was issued last week in conjunction with the proposed regulatory repeal of the EPA's endangerment finding, the 2009 scientific finding that human-caused climate change endangers human health and safety. Wright told CNN that he was the one who handpicked the four researchers and one economist who authored the Trump administration report, all of them well-known, longtime climate science deniers. Why an economist was included to write this pretend non-peer-reviewed scientific report is a separate issue, but said Wright, the fracking executive, quote, "I just made a list of who do I think are the true, honest scientists. I made a list of about a dozen of them that I thought were very senior and very well respected. I called the top five and everyone said yes." Well, of course they did, Chris. These are folks who have made their living for years by being among the tiny handful of scientists and one economist, I guess, who will show up at, you know, congressional hearings or Fox News or write fossil fuel friendly op-eds in right-wing publications claiming that thousands and thousands of scientists around the globe and the tens of thousands of peer-reviewed scientific reports that they have published are all totally wrong. But these four and their economist pal, that they've got the real science that the federal government should now act upon and gut initiatives for clean, cheap, abundant, renewable energy in favor of deadly, expensive, but profitable to folks like Chris Wright and his friends, fossil fuels like oil and coal and natural gas, compared to the national climate assessments and international climate science reports that take years to compile and review. CNN correctly notes the recent Department of Energy report took just 2 months and, I guess, five people to produce. And yet, as they say, a lie can make it all the way around the world before the truth even puts its pants on, or however that saying goes. So we're just doing our best to sort of catch up with the liars who don't mind at all if you and your kids and your grandkids die, as long as they are allowed to continue making the largest profits ever known to man off of your sickness and death. Nice work if you can get it, and if you have no moral compass whatsoever. But if you had a moral compass, you likely wouldn't, you know, have been hired to work in the Trump administration in the first place, I suspect. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll get back and get you updated on the courageous fight by Texas Democrats hoping to block Governor Greg Abbott and state Republicans at the order of Donald Trump from redistricting the U.S. House map in the middle of the decade in advance of next year's midterms in hopes of stealing five U.S. House seats from Democrats from majority-minority districts, by the way, on the very same week that the Voting Rights Act, signed by Lyndon B. Johnson in 1965, turns 60 years old. That is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
The eyes of Texas are upon you all the livelong day. The eyes of Texas are upon you. You cannot get away.
Well, we'll see.
Do not think you can escape them at night or early morn. The eyes of Texas are upon you till Gabriel blows his horn.
Well, we will see. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Democrats here in California moved this week to counter redistricting efforts by Texas Republicans with discussions of a new political map of their own, drawn to help Democrats win as many as five of the state's currently Republican U.S. House seats next year. That would functionally offset the five Democratic House seats that Republicans have targeted to steal from Democrats in majority-minority districts in Texas at the order of Governor Greg Abbott, working at the order of Donald Trump, who knows he is likely to see his party trounced in next year's midterms based on his and their terrible and wildly unpopular policies. As the New York Times reports this week, the California plan seemed far-fetched just a few weeks ago, but has gained momentum as a redistricting war that began in Texas threatens to spread across the country. California's Democratic members of Congress and the state legislature have been briefed in recent days. State lawmakers are planning to vote on the proposal here in California the week of August 18. And California Governor Gavin Newsom said he hopes to put a new map before voters in a special election on November 4. Something I will note that Texas lawmakers are not doing and will not be doing. They are doing these changes to the maps themselves, or they're trying to, without voter input at the Texas state capitol. Not that California is being noble in putting the measure before voters. We largely have no choice here but to do so because voters previously voted into our state constitution that redistricting shall be done by an independent citizen redistricting commission, which is why we have some of the most competitive districts in the country here in the Golden State. So to waive that map, Governor Newsom is now proposing to put the matter before voters this November to ask them if we should temporarily suspend the commission's map through 2030 in order to counter what Texas is doing or trying to do. Congressman Robert Garcia, Democrat of Long Beach in California, said, quote, "If Republicans are going to play this game, California can fight and push back harder. We're not going to allow national congressional Republicans and Donald Trump to rig and gerrymander the map across the country and just sit by and do nothing." But, notes the New York Times, partisanship is boiling over in Texas and scalding other states. On Tuesday, the state's senior senator, John Cornyn, asked the FBI to help locate and arrest dozens of Democratic state lawmakers who left Texas to block the state legislature from voting on the Republican redistricting plan by breaking quorum so it can't be voted on down in Texas. So, yes, that's right. John Cornyn is asking the FBI to hunt down and arrest Democratic lawmakers and force them back to Texas, to force them to not break quorum and vote on a map that would steal seats from Democrats. And in the bargain, reversing a federal court order that U.S. House districts be implemented under the Voting Rights Act of 1965 due to Texas racially gerrymandering those districts to try and prevent minority voters, black and Hispanic in Texas, from electing a representative of their choosing. So what federal law are these Democratic lawmakers breaking that would trigger a manhunt by the Federal Bureau of Investigations to somehow enforce? There's an apparent civil warrant for the arrest of those lawmakers that was issued by the Republican Speaker of the Texas House. But that's not a criminal warrant, and that's under state law. There is no such federal law. So the notion that the FBI would get involved here, at least in normal times, is absolutely ridiculous. Nonetheless, when asked this week if the FBI should get involved in this matter, Donald Trump told reporters, quote, "They may have to." Really? Why might they have to, Mr. President? Because you have no respect for the rule of law? The potential use of federal agents to round up the Texas lawmakers who have sought refuge in New York, Illinois, and Massachusetts to break quorum in the Texas House, to prevent a corrupt vote on this corrupt new U.S. House map in Texas, would set up a clash between the Democratic governors of those states and the Trump administration. Defiant Democrats said, however, they would not back down, including those who have fled from Texas to Illinois for now, like State Rep. Ann Johnson, Democratic state rep from Houston, who explained why Democrats have fled the state to CBS News this week.
Abandoning your job is going to Cancun in the middle of a deadly freeze, right? Mm-hmm. Abandoning your job is cutting health care when people need access. Abandoning your job is cutting public education when we already have one of the worst education systems in the nation. What we are doing is the fundamental protection by our founding fathers in the Texas Constitution that says the minority party has the opportunity to break quorum when you know that the majority has really gone off the rails. The fact that Texas Republicans are willing to sell their soul, sell out their state, and sell out the American people to serve the interest of Donald Trump and give him five seats at a time where we know he is afraid of voters voting on his policies next November in 2026. When Donald Trump called Georgia Republicans and said, I just need you to find me 11,000 votes, they said, no, sir, that's a step too far. But when he called Texas Republicans and said, I need you to steal me five seats, they said, does July work for you? Well, it doesn't work for us as Texas Democrats. This is not just about our voters. It's about the nation. And it's important for people to know they have threatened us personally. They have threatened our arrest. They have threatened our jobs. They have threatened us. The solution is if we show up today at 3 o'clock and sit and be quiet, then we get to keep ours. But it kills the voice of everybody in this country. And so we won't. We won't sit and shut up to have them shut up the voices of voters.
Texas State Rep. Ann Johnson of Houston, speaking, I believe, from Illinois there to CBS News this week. And by the way, this notion that these, you know, that you're hearing from Republicans that these Democrats have abandoned their job. All of these complaints comes just days after U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson sent Republican lawmakers home early for their August break in order to abandon their job of voting on releasing the Epstein files. In addition to California, national party leaders, meanwhile, are looking to Illinois, New York, Maryland to redraw their House maps as well. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said this week, quote, if they're going to cheat, then all of us have to take a hard look at what the effect of that cheating is on democracy. That means we all have to stand up and do the right thing. So as far as I'm concerned, he said, everything is on the table. California could be a significant counter to Republican moves. While maps are still not finalized, one plan that was presented to the congressional delegation this week would wipe away as many as 5 of the 9 House Republicans from California. Quote, it's triggered on the basis of what occurs or does not occur in Texas, Governor Newsom told reporters on Monday. He said, I hope they do the right thing. And if they do the right thing, then there'll be no cause for us to have to move forward with these new maps. And since when have Texas Republicans not done the right thing? The plan is coming together quickly, apparently, because California lawmakers need to vote on it before it can go on the November ballot this year. Newsom has said he wants the maps to be complete before voters weigh in so that they know what they're actually voting for or against. Legislators in Sacramento, therefore, must act by August 22, write that on your calendar, in order to get the plan onto this November's ballot, according to the California Secretary of State's office. But Democrats who approved the independent commission previously, they may now be in a fighting mood to undo that, at least temporarily. Congresswoman Laura Friedman, my representative, by the way, but no relation, even though she does spell her name correctly. She's a Democrat from L.A. She said she has received, quote, overwhelmingly positive feedback from constituents when mentioning the possibility of a mid-decade redistricting at her recent events in the district. Quote, people were saying things like, finally, the Democrats are fighting back. You cannot wage the fight on your own set of rules when someone else is playing by a different set of rules, the congresswoman said. Meanwhile, in Texas, in his letter to the FBI director, Kash Patel, Texas Senator Cornyn, a Republican facing a re-election primary battle next year of his own, said, quote, federal resources are necessary to locate the out-of-state Texas legislators who are potentially acting in violation of the law. Now, whether they are defying any law whatsoever is questionable, but they are certainly not violating federal law as would normally be needed to involve the FBI in such a matter. Hours later, after Cornyn's statement, the wildly corrupt state attorney general Ken Paxton, who happens to be Cornyn's primary opponent next year, said that if the absent Democrats don't return by Friday this week, he will seek a court order declaring their seats vacant. The Speaker of the Texas House on Monday issued those civil warrants for the arrest of absent Democrats, but the warrant only applies within the state of Texas, and they're based on House rules, not based on criminal law. Governor Abbott directed then the state police to assist the Texas House in executing those civil warrants, suggesting the lawmakers had violated the state's anti-bribery law. The premise here is that people are donating to help the lawmakers afford to stay out of town, and Abbott is claiming that is somehow bribery. David Frumkin, a professor at the University of Houston Law Center, said that the threat from Abbott was, quote, an egregious violation of the separation of powers. He called the bribery theory laughably weak. He noted that the Texas Supreme Court has previously ruled that legislators are, in fact, legally permitted to break quorum. Quote, if there's no legal duty, then there is no criminal bribery, he said. Representative Gene Wu, a Houston Democrat and the party's leader in the state house, said that Senator Cornyn was, quote, threatening to misuse the FBI in a pathetic attempt to prove his extremist credentials to his party's voters. Good luck with that, said Wu, which really does appear to be the case. Cornyn is trying to be the tough guy here because he's got this challenge from the right, from the corrupt MAGA right, from the Attorney General Paxton. So Cornyn is trying to look like the tough guy here. Later on Tuesday, Governor Abbott filed an emergency petition with the Texas Supreme Court, which is currently comprised of 9 Republican justices and 0 Democrats, seeking the removal of Representative Wu from office, the Democratic leader. The governor argued that by his absence, Wu had, quote, forfeited the office of state rep. Wu said in response, this office does not belong to Greg Abbott, and it does not belong to me. It belongs to the people of House District 137 who elected me. Back here in California, the governor, Newsom, in response to all of this, tweeted, quote, the governor of Texas is threatening to remove democratically elected officials from office because they have refused to rig an election for Donald Trump. United States of America, 2025. And then on Thursday, Trump's FBI, you will be shocked to learn, or maybe you won't be, agreed to help track down Democratic Texas lawmakers who fled the state to thwart Republican efforts to redraw the congressional districts, at least according to Senator Cornyn. But it remains unclear, according to Reuters, whether federal agents really would actually take action here. The FBI has not deployed any resources yet. Reportedly, that according to a source familiar with the internal discussions on this, the FBI had committed to provide help if asked by Texas law enforcement. Such a request had not yet been made as of Thursday afternoon, according to a unnamed DOJ official speaking with Reuters. But hoping to appear like a tough guy, I guess, Senator Cornyn said in a statement on Thursday referring to the FBI director, Director Kash Patel has approved my request for the FBI to assist state and local enforcement in locating runaway Texas House Democrats. J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, Democrat, brushed off the idea that the FBI could be deployed to round up legislators in his state, calling it, quote, grandstanding, and warning that state troopers in Illinois will, quote, protect everybody in Illinois. We'll see. Barbara McQuaid, the University of Michigan Law School professor and former U.S. attorney, said talk of involving the FBI appeared to be saber-rattling. She said, quote, although federal agents do have authority to assist local law enforcement officials and tracking down fugitives. That requires a filed criminal charge. And of course, there are no criminal charges here at this time. But by the way, I would add that that's, you know, how federal agents worked before their corrupt takeover by an autocratic dictator. So we shall see. In the meantime, more than 50 Democrats from the Texas legislature left the state ahead of the legislative session earlier this week, denying the quorum necessary to vote on the redistricting plan championed and demanded by Trump. And as of airtime today, they have yet to return, as far as we know, either on their own accord or via Trump or Cornyn or Abbott or Paxton or Cash Patel's jackbooted thugs, hoping to blatantly violate the Voting Rights Act in the bargain before next year's election, rewriting, making these majority-minority districts just disappear in order to steal U.S. House seats. And yes, perhaps the U.S. House majority next year along with it. And all of this is happening this week, exactly 60 years to the day after President Lyndon Baines Johnson of Texas signed the landmark civil rights era voting law to prevent exactly what is now unfolding this week in Texas. Here is LBJ explaining his reason for signing the Voting Rights Act in the wake of unspeakable violence and death against black voters and those who would register them to vote exactly 60 years ago this week on Wednesday.
Today is a triumph for freedom as huge as any victory that's ever been won on any battlefield. This act flows from a clear and simple wrong. Its only purpose is to right that wrong. Millions of Americans are denied the right to vote because of their color. This law will ensure them the right to vote. The wrong is one which no American in his heart can justify. The right is one which no American, true to our principles, can deny. In 1957, as the leader of the majority in the United States Senate, speaking in supporting legislation to guarantee to the right of all men a right to vote, I said, "This right to vote is the basic right without which all others are meaningless. It gives people as individuals, control over their own destinies. The vote is the most powerful instrument ever devised by man for breaking down injustice and destroying the terrible walls which imprison men because they're different from other men. And so we will move step by step, often painfully, but I think with clear vision, along the path toward American freedom. Thus, this is a victory for the freedom of the American Negro, but it is also a victory for the freedom of the American nation. And every family across this great entire searching land will live stronger in liberty, will live more splendid in expectation, and will be prouder to be American because of the act that you have passed that I will sign today."
President Lyndon B. Johnson, 60 years ago this week, signing the landmark Voting Rights Act into law, paving the way for tens of millions of new American voters over the years, as Republicans have almost now succeeded in killing that landmark legislation entirely. Green News Report is next up on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Wish we could stop the world. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
The urgency is real. The evidence is clear, and the responsibility is on us.
Nations gather in Geneva to again confront the global crisis of escalating plastic pollution. Trump EPA moves to claw back billions in community grants for residential rooftop solar. Plus, as energy costs rise, the Trump administration escalates its war on cheap, renewable energy.
All of that idiocy and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And then, of course, when the sun goes down, you have a catastrophic failure called sunset, and there's no solar energy produced.
My dude, Doug Burgum, Interior Secretary, have you never heard about battery storage? Are you really that stupid, or are you just that much of a stooge for the fossil fuel industry? Take your pick. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you mean they haven't solved this plastic problem just yet?
No, unfortunately, they haven't. World leaders are gathering in Geneva, Switzerland this week for the sixth round of negotiations aimed at reaching a landmark agreement to end the global plastic pollution crisis that is affecting every ecosystem and every person on the planet. The UN Environmental Program warns that without a legally binding agreement to curb plastic production, plastic waste is projected to triple by 2060. To address the global scale of plastic pollution, the UN hopes to reach a deal similar to the Paris Climate Agreement. A new study in The Lancet, released in advance of the talks, warns that plastics are, quote, a grave danger to humans, responsible for an estimated $1.5 trillion in annual health-related costs globally. Plastic pollution is now found literally everywhere, from the highest peaks to the deepest oceans, in plants and animals, human brains, organs, and placentas. In an interview with Global News, study author Dr. Philip Landrigan of Boston College warned,
the concentrations of micro and nanoplastic particles in human tissue are increasing from year to year. We think that the chemicals that go into plastics ought to be subject to the same degree of regulation as pharmaceuticals, given that they both have the potential to get into the human body.
But like in the Paris Agreement, oil-rich nations are acting as the spoilers. Plastic is made from oil. The Trump administration is urging countries to reject any agreement that limits plastic production.
Of course. Did they even bother to show up in Switzerland?
Yes.
Oh, but just to heckle everyone and tell them don't agree to anything.
Exactly.
Right.
Here in the U.S., the Trump administration is also escalating its war on renewable energy. The Interior Department issued a new order saying it will no longer grant permits for a wind or solar project on public lands unless it will generate as much energy per acre as a coal, gas, or nuclear power plant, a very difficult standard to meet. But the restriction won't apply to ethanol, which uses 100 times as much land as solar per unit of energy. Interior also rescinded huge swaths of ocean set aside for offshore wind development. The Transportation Department says it will require new wind projects nationally to be set back more than a mile from railroads and highways for no legitimate reason.
What was the reason they gave?
They said it might interfere with radio frequencies.
Oh, please. What it might interfere with is Donald Trump's vision as he's driving down the highway and he likes to pretend he doesn't like to look at wind farms.
Experts warn the Trump administration's new restrictions amount to a massive curtailment of American energy sources at a time when U.S. electricity demand and prices are expected to soar due to the proliferation of data centers and more costly natural gas plants.
Good God, what a mess.
The Trump Environmental Protection Agency this week said it will terminate the Biden-era Solar for All program to claw back $7 billion in community grants that were slated to help nearly a million low- and middle-income households install rooftop solar to lower their energy costs.
Wow.
The Trump EPA also delayed the first-ever rule requiring oil and gas operators to curb their leaks of potent climate-warming methane in preparation for eliminating that rule altogether.
Why not just set up an ExxonMobil sign right on the White House at this point?
Finally, there are some bright spots.
Bring it.
Despite the Trump administration's attacks, the largest offshore wind project in the United States is 60% complete and on track to deliver electricity early next year, faster and cheaper than constructing a new natural gas or nuclear plant.
Well, I'm sure Trump will just direct his Department of Defense to blow them up before they go into use. What a mess. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You're going to keep on fooling around now, baby. You're going to mess up a good thing. You're going to mess up a good thing.
Debatable how good it was in the first place, but I take your point. By the way, Susan Schaefer over on Facebook comments on today's Green News Report to say the new regulations about wind farms and the railroad tracks are terrible. Why is there not huge blowback about this? Why is there not huge blowback about this, Desi Doyen?
I have no idea. I think we try to cover it as much as we can.
I think the reason there's not huge blowback is because I think I'll bet you 99.9% of the people who just learned that from your Green News Report did not hear it before. And if, you know, they're not talking about it, if they're not reporting on it, if opponents of this madness are not out there making a hell of a lot of noise, well, then people are not going to get outraged about it.
There you go.
All right, we got to get out. Thanks again to our producer, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other since the beginning of time, download it for free at bradblog.com. It is free thanks to those of you who hit a donate button while you're at bradblog.com or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at TheBradBlog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're going to keep on a fooling around, oh, baby. You're going to mess up a good day. You're gonna mess up a good thing. Now don't you come sneaking across town, baby, to catch me doing wrong. 'Cause you know that I-